Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you very much for joining us. Our guests are Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News and from Fairbanks, Dermot Cole of the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. An Anchorage police officer shoots and kills a man advancing on him. The man is threatening him with a broom handle or broomstick. Yeah. The story really captured Anchorage. What happened, and specifically, what are the police saying now that they've released their official report on this tragic incident?
Well, Michael, what happened was this occurred on June 9th in Mountain View outside an apartment complex. Shane Tassi, a 26-year-old, came out of the apartment complex after people had phoned 911, said there was a disturbance there. A police officer responded, one police officer at this particular point in time. Mr. Tassi came out with what was later, we found out, was a broken off broom handle, and he approached the officer at a rather quick pace. The officer told him to stop. When he got within swinging distance of that stick, the officer he opened fire, shot three times, and killed Mr. Tassi. He died later at a hospital. The state conducted an investigation, as is policy, and found that Officer Boaz Johnson was innocent of a wrongful shooting here. Said the shooting was justified, let's put it that way. And
presumably that includes that he followed department policy.
Right, he followed the proper procedures. Now, Chief Mark Mew held a news conference yesterday. They released some surveillance tape. They didn't show the actual shooting, but they showed the events that led up to it. They also showed some photographs that they say was of Tassi's apartment, that the refrigerator was overturned, things were destroyed. They say that there were reports that he was intoxicated, although toxicology reports are not in just yet. But this shows that he was in some sort of rage when he came out of the apartment building. And you do see him coming out with this stick in his hand, and he's.
Are these videos very clear?
Yeah, they're very clear, yeah. And again, police edited these. They released what they felt, what they decided was releasable. They do not show the actual shooting. They just show that Mr. Tassi is coming out of his apartment complex with this stick in his hand. So there's a lot of folks in the community who are upset. We talked to some of the people who live out there yesterday, and their thoughts are, police aren't very responsive to their needs. They're not treated with the kind of respect that they'd like to be treated.
I'm wondering about one thing, and I know readers, listeners, members of the community have wondered about this too. Mm-hmm. The why not the taser question?
We got into that as well. He did not have a taser. He did not have a taser with him. He had no backup with him at that particular point in time. This is a terrible situation for a police officer to be in. He was rapidly approached by this person who had this stick in his hand.
And was big, right?
Yeah. And the officer later stated, according to Chief Mew, that he was fearful of being hit with the stick, knocked unconscious. He had already drawn his gun. He was afraid that this person might take the gun and shoot him. And I've never been in that position at all. I couldn't certainly sit and second guess.
And what we're left with now is the opportunity, or opportunity is not the right word. Go ahead.
You had asked about the taser. Chief Mew addressed that. He said that usually what happens is that one officer uses the taser while another officer has his gun drawn just in case of the taser not working, and then there's some lethal force there at the scene. And Officer Johnson just did not have that opportunity. He was there by himself. So what's going to happen now is the attorney for the Tassi family pretty much has said that they'll review what the materials are available right now, and they'll probably file a civil lawsuit against the police force. Okay. So, and I interrupted you before.
No, that's actually what I yeah. wondered about the next stage, and the next yeah. stage is the possibility of a civil suit, which yeah. would be against the police department and therefore the city of Anchorage.
And I think another stage to all of this is that there are some tense feelings, a lot of emotions running around in that area, that part of Anchorage. And
Mountain View was
in
it?
The Mountain View yeah. area. So it sounds as if the police department should probably move into that area and have some good heart-to-heart talks with the people in that community.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Dermot, the U.S. Department of Justice cleared the Alaska's plan for redistricting in the legislature, and we're going to go ahead, and what do you know, we're going to have an election with the latest districts that have been laid out. What did DOJ say specifically, and what does this mean for Fairbanks?
Well, Mike, as you know, every 10 years we go through this process of redrawing district lines based on the last census. The action by the Department of Justice this week allows the amended plan to go forward for the 2012 elections. The Alaska Redistricting Board, which is headed by former Senator John Torgerson, said this week that this action will allow at least this next go-round of elections to take place. This doesn't mean that the plan will not be subject to future change, however, or to future court fights, as there are still unsettled issues with the Alaska Supreme Court and possibly with the Department of Justice over the plan for the long term. In this particular area, it means that we're going to have some new races. Incumbent Senator John Coghill is likely to face incumbent Senator Joe Thomas in one Senate race. Incumbent Joe Pascovan is likely to face former legislator Pete Kelly in another Senate race. And in a new district, former Senator Ralph Seekins is facing off in the primary with Click Bishop, the former state labor commissioner.
And Dermot, if I might interrupt you just briefly, since we're not in the same room and we can't really exchange hand signals, the Democrats and others who initiated lawsuits went to court, spent a great deal of time and money pursuing this in court, pursuing changes in court. It wasn't like they came away without any winnings. They did get some changes that they liked. For example, originally, Pascovan was going to be running against Joe Thomas.
Right. That's the biggest change from what was first announced by the board to the current plan. So instead of Pascovan facing Thomas, we're not going to have Thomas facing Coghill. The other big change for this area, and it is a major one, is that there's going to be a House district that basically I refer to it as the Esther Goldstream Bering Sea district. So it's going to extend from the Goldstream Valley, which is just outside of Fairbanks,
from sea to shining sea.
Well, you know, from Smith Lake to the Bering Sea, let's put it that way. And with that, the senator for that district will probably be Lyman Hoffman from Bethel. So this plan has some major changes. The point is, after this election, there may be more additional changes to come because the court fighting is not over.
And we should note that this has happened before, where the court has in the year 2 after the year 10 has allowed one plan, and then a couple of years later courts or several courts have changed it. So we'll look for that. Steve, I'm interested here. The campaign should be starting pretty soon.
Yeah,
we should be hearing
yeah.
from people. They should be spending money.
Yeah.
Are they?
Where
are we?
I think there's some money out there. I see a few yard signs popping up, very few. It's really hard to campaign or get Alaskans to pay attention to anything besides being outside, fishing, camping, those kinds of things in the summertime. So really things aren't going to start up probably until the end of July, early August. August 28th is the primary, of course. I think there'll be some money out there, especially for some of those key Senate races. Dermot went through some of them up there in the interior. Those are going to be important races. One of the races that here in the Anchorage area, I think that's going to bring up a lot of interest. You've got an open Senate seat in the UMed district. You have Berta Gardner, who is trying to step up from the House and go into the Senate. She's got a Republican, actually it's a primary, so she'll face whomever comes out of that primary. I think Don Smith's running for it, and then Joe Josephson's son, who's also an attorney, he's running for that.
Andy, he's in a House district.
He's in that House district as well. So I think they're both running for that. The one that really interests me, Hollis French. He's the incumbent senator, Democrat, wields a lot of power in the coalition. His district was greatly affected by this rewrite of the election lines. It's a little more conservative than what it had been in years past. Bob Bell, former Anchorage Assemblyman, well-known conservative, he signed up to run against Hollis French in that race. There's also some other recruiting that's going on. There's always rumors that Andrew Halcrow is being recruited to run against Hollis French as well, but that should be an interesting
race, too.
And nobody,
we don't hear complaints from the general public saying, there aren't enough political ads on television. I need more.
Oh, no, we never hear that. No. And like I said, they're not really going to be paying attention just now. But I think where the money is going to come in is to the candidate who says, you know, I am for or I am against Governor Parnell's oil tax plan. I think that'll be the litmus test for a lot of things.
Yeah. Dermot, I had a question for you. This is an unusual election. In that we do not have a gubernatorial contest or a U.S. Senate contest at the head of the ticket. So this happens every few years. It's not impossible to happen, but it is uncommon. It seems to me that what this does is reduce the kind of natural interest there is in the election. What do you think?
Well, it may reduce the interest in the state elections, but since this is a presidential year, that brings in people who you know, ordinarily don't participate or don't care much about state elections.
I guess I should stand corrected, but I was thinking mostly of just this primary of the next 6 or 8 weeks. Once we get from August till November, yes, it's a presidential election, big year. Okay, Dermot, let's stick with you. The Air Force has, at least for the moment, changed its mind about those F-16s at Eielson Air Force Base. They're going to stay there for the immediate future as a result of a revision of policy. Why don't you tell us about this revision of policy, or temporary hold? Maybe that's a better way to call it.
Right. The Defense Secretary Leon Panetta instructed the Air Force to put a hold on Air Force transfers. I think it's important to keep in mind, and I don't think we've paid enough attention to that here, frankly, that this was not necessarily a move directed at Eielson Air Force Base. This was largely in response to pressure from Congress, from people in various parts of the United States who objected to proposed transfers and reductions. So I don't know that this is actually a sign that the Air Force is changing its position at all on the proposed Eielson transfer. But Panetta did come under pressure from many key senators to put a delay to these transfers from their states. For instance, in Montana, this was largely this action was portrayed as a victory for Montana, preserving a guard function there that its senators had fought for. So we're basically, while the next federal budget is being debated, these transfers won't take place. This does give the people in this area time to sort of, you know, mount a political strategy to try and retain the Air Force operation in the Fairbanks area.
Some people are going to see politics in these kind of decisions. For example, in Montana, Democrat John Tester is running for re-election. Presumably, this would be of help to him in Montana. And here in Alaska, Mark Begich is not running for re-election, but he will be running for re-election in 2 years, and this could presumably help him. Is there any hint of a political dimension to this, or is that just totally kept under wraps?
I think there's always a political dimension in military spending and especially in proposed military reductions. And one of the key people who chimed in on this was Dan Inouye from Hawaii, who said, yeah, you know, it's best if you just don't do this right now. Mm-hmm. And because he is a sort of a key power broker in the Senate, and others of his stature have also said, you know, you better not do this right now. They haven't mentioned the election directly, but clearly that is behind the scenes.
One final thought, Dermot. Is there any chance here that Mitt Romney or a spokesman for Governor Romney would come forward and say, as with the Health Care Matter or Act, after the election, we're going to revisit this and we may do something totally different. This is off the board. Any chance of that?
I think I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, defense cuts are a highly sensitive political area, and but as I've said before, Alaska's in a different situation here because this is not a reduction of military spending in Alaska, this transfer. This is just a transfer from one part of the state to another. So it's going to make this harder to object to by Alaskans, at least, you know, when viewed from outside.
Once again, I'm Michael Carey. I'm here with Dermot Cole and Steve McDonald. Steve, it seems like the entire country has an opinion on the Supreme Court's decision in the Obamacare, yeah, Affordable Care Act, the Health Care Act that just passed muster of the United States Supreme Court yesterday. What are our local officials and leaders saying, starting with Governor Parnell, and I know the delegation has chimed in as well, and some lesser lights too?
The delegation's pretty much split along party lines. You had Don Young, Representative Don Young, Senator Lisa Murkowski, both Republicans, coming out and railing against the decision and saying that they would support attempts to overhaul or do away with the Affordable Care Act. And Senator Murkowski pretty much predicted that within the coming weeks there would be legislation introduced in the Senate that would repeal the bill. So they came out against what the Supreme Court had decided and pretty much said we'll change this or do away with this in the Senate. Senator Mark Begich, a Democrat, he came out and said, okay, it's not a perfect bill, it's not a perfect system, but it does help Alaskans, it does help people without health care, and we could tweak it. But he came out.
18% of Alaskans don't have health care. That's
right.
More than 100,000, something like that.
That's right. That's right. And so he came out favor and feels that, yeah, maybe you could do some tweaking, but this is the law of the land. Let's get on with it. Let's move on with this. It's going to become a political issue, obviously. This is going to be something that is going to be absorbed into the presidential campaign, and it'll be an issue for voters to decide on there at the ballot box between Romney and President Obama. Governor Parnell, he was one of 26 governors to file a lawsuit against this piece of legislation. He's kind of taking a wait and see attitude on this as to how the state's going to react. They're a little concerned about the expansion of Medicaid for people without health care, and who's going to pick up that tab.
Okay. Yeah. Dermot Cole, does this have any electoral resonance in Fairbanks, or is this just at the presidential level and it's not something you could really use at the local level?
I think it's not going to be much of a factor in local elections. The people who don't like President Obama have been mad at him from the beginning. I guess you could be mad, madder, and maddest.
Your mad meter.
Well, this is fairly well established. The political positions and the lines on this. And so I think while this is certainly a huge national issue, I don't think it plays a part in local election results.
And probably that's true all over Alaska. Mm-hmm. People have made up their mind about President Obama and how they feel about him and are going to vote accordingly. I was just going to add, I read Justice Roberts's, and I read it rapidly, I will admit, opinion. And it actually, in some respects, is quite direct and quite simple. He tells us that the administration wanted to use the Commerce Clause to require people to buy insurance, and Justice Roberts couldn't accept that because it was forcing people or coercing people to engage in commerce, and he wasn't going to allow that. On the other hand, with the tax, the idea that you could be taxed and required to buy, taxed into buying insurance, he accepted that because he argues from historical principles that the government has lengthy history of taxing powers. And the government, this is, some people will find this sophistry, I'm sure, but Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, argued that you're not being coerced into buying insurance. You're being told you don't have to buy anything, that's your choice, but you will be asked to pay a tax if you don't buy the insurance. And Roberts goes into some detail about his view that the tax would actually be modest for most potential taxpayers, right, and the number of people in the United States who might be required to buy this tax. But it's a very interesting document, and because he called it a tax and says the tax, even though President Obama tried to have it both ways, because the collection mechanism is within, you know, the tax code is within the tax code, and the IRS will be collecting the money off your tax return. And as I understand it, if you are fined, or I'm not sure exactly what they call it, but it really amounts to, if they demand money of you, it'll be taken out of refunds. The IRS will not have the power to come to your house and garnish you or foreclose or anything like that, that you will lose future refunds. In any case, let's move on.
It's going to be a fun fall.
Yeah, and, it's, and undoubtedly somebody will say that it's unconstitutional, throw me in jail, and that'll be a couple of years from now. Just about every time you pick up the paper this summer, there's a story about fishing, and it usually is about, it's not about somebody winning the Seward Salmon Derby, it's about somebody who can't catch fish, and scientists and others trying to explain why.
Yeah, it seems like every week.
Dismal year, why?
Yeah, why? We don't know. That's a good question. Biologists say there's the escapement of salmon smolt from the streams and rivers in Alaska is more than sufficient to keep the species populated. What happens once they get out into the ocean? Nobody knows. Everything takes place, of course.
This has been the problem with this kind of science from the beginning.
That's right. They can do studies. They know there's predation. There are northern pike in streams that love to eat little salmon, and there's eagles, and there's birds, and certainly bears, those kinds of things. They know that. But enough salmon, according to their studies, the biologists for the state say, and the federal government say, there are more than enough escapement out of the streams into the oceans. But what happens out there, they're not sure. There are theories. One points to the temperature of the ocean.
Yeah.
The ocean waters in Alaska are warmer than they have been in recent years. So
then there's cyclical arguments. If you look at the patterns, every so many years something unfortunate happens.
Something is, the water is cooler down in the Pacific Northwest. They're enjoying a bumper crop of salmon coming in there in Washington and Oregon. Things aren't so good up here. It's pretty frightening, for not only for the commercial, but especially for subsistence and the sports fishermen too.
Okay.
Of course, there's always the bycatch issue too, which
and,
is another issue.
And I don't know, maybe there'll be some good runs here in the fall in the Kenai River or late summer, and we'll have a happier outcome.
Let's hope so.
Dermot, Joe Miller made the news all summer long up till now in Fairbanks, and for really the last couple of years. Are his battles with the Fairbanks North Star Borough and others finally over, or is there another iteration out there waiting for us? Former Senate candidate Joe Miller.
It's not over till it's over, Mike, and it's not over. The attorneys in this case now are still in court arguing over the language that's going to be attached to the final judgment or settlement. Joe Miller's attorneys want to just have a simple declaration saying that he gets $5,000 and he'll be able to declare that as a victory. The Fairbanks North Star Borough and other attorneys who are involved in this want to have the language attached to that that says that they admit no fault and that they're not admitting that any of the allegations put forth by Mr. Miller. This hopefully this will be cleared up in July. And
would it be with a conference, with the judge? They would confer with the judge and decide what they're going to say? Is that how this works?
Well, there was a status conference this week in Anchorage, and the judge basically told the attorneys to sort of try and get things worked out and, you know, come back next month. If Mr. Miller's attorneys don't accede to the request, or actually it's not a request, it's a demand that the borough says it's going to not admit any fault, then that judgment may be off and go back to the process in which Joe Miller would be deposed, and the discovery, not discovery, but the process of gathering more information would continue. And that's going to lead to, would lead to Mr. Miller having to answer a lot of questions that could be really contentious and controversial. Anyway, I'm thinking this is going to be resolved in July, but okay. We'll see.
You used the magic word continue. We can't continue because we're out of time. Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us, and have a great 4th of July.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.